You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
Did you know that one in every 50 people have a brain aneurysm? Ruptured brain aneurysms are fatal 50% of the time. And horribly, there is a rupture every 18 minutes. On today's show, I will be talking with someone who has been a friend and guardian angel to me. And as I went through brain surgery myself for an unruptured aneurysm, I met Tricia Scobie because she's on the board of the B Foundation, a group dedicated to research, awareness, advocacy, and support. Their goal is to live in a world where brain aneurysms can be found before rupture so that lives will be saved and the devastation they cause will be eliminated. I'm Hillary Topper, and this is Hillary Topper On Air. I'm so excited that Tricia Scobie is here to join me today. She is a survivor of a life-changing brain aneurysm. Tricia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Hillary. Thanks for having me today. But I just want to say I'm not a board member of the B Foundation. I sit on their ambassadors group, and we do a lot of work with the B Foundation.
Thank you for clarifying that. Could you tell me a little bit about you and your background before we start the interview?
My background for my brain aneurysm or my background about who I am?
Your life.
My life. So I am a paralegal. It is probably the third different remaking of my life. I work for a real estate attorney up in New York. I have lived in Chicago. I've lived in Pittsburgh, New York, and New Jersey. And I recently moved down to Charleston, South Carolina. I have a significant other, and between the two of us, we have five kids, three of which I did on my own, twins and an older one. What else do you need to know about me? I love to bake. Baking is my stress relief. It is what I do when life gets pretty crazy and out of control. It's also what I do just because I have free time and need something to do. And I'm a Chicagoan at heart. My Chicago roots will never go away from me. I love Chicago sports. I kind of live and breathe them.
The food there is pretty good too.
The food is really good. You know, the food is really good in Chicago. The food is really good in New York, and the food is really good in Charleston. So perhaps that's what I keep chasing as I move from place to place.
Sounds like a good title of a book, Chasing Food.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. So take us back to that pivotal moment on November 8th. That was 2020. So it was like right in the heart of COVID. And share your experience with our listeners.
Oh, not always an easy story to tell, but an important story to tell. So I am a migraine sufferer. I have had them since I was a teenager. I had a migraine on Saturday evening and didn't really think much of it. And then that in the middle of the night, I woke up with another migraine, something that's never, ever happened to me in my life. All of a sudden, I had the aura. My head didn't feel well. But again, didn't think much of it because I suffer from migraines. In the morning, I was talking with John and I said to him, I had a migraine last night. He goes, oh, how are you? And I said, I have that kind of migraine hangover. I don't know if you suffer from them, Hillary, but you kind of feel off the next day. And he said, but it's kind of different in that, like, I have this pressure behind my eyes and I've never experienced that before. He said, all right. We just kind of went on with our days, not feeling great. I was baking that day. I was doing something. I made cake pops for a friend for her son's birthday. And then I went to sit down and watch football with my 22-year-old daughter. So we sat down to watch the Bears game, and I wasn't feeling great. And I thought, oh, you know what? I'll close my eyes. What's the big deal? The next thing I remember was questions being thrown at me by John. The story goes that my daughter went to ask me a question. I didn't answer. She looked over and I was passed out and foaming at the mouth. She immediately got him. He came inside and called 911. They started asking me questions about who I am, where I live, making sure I knew those things. And then they asked me, did I have a headache? And I said, yes. And they said, on a scale of 1 to 10, what is your headache? And I said, it's an 11. It was like a headache I'd never had before. And with that, the tears start flying because then I realized just how awful I felt. Paramedics showed up very quickly thereafter. I got in the ambulance. My understanding is I threw up in the ambulance. And then they took me to the hospital, immediately did scans. And none of that I remember. All I remember was the questions being asked of me. And the next thing I remember was someone saying to me, I need to have brain surgery. And I said, well, what do you mean I need to have brain surgery? And they said, you have a bleed in your head. And if you don't have surgery immediately, you're going to die. He said, well, I'm not planning on dying today, so go ahead and do the surgery. But I asked him how he knew, because I didn't even remember at that point the test being run. And he had said they had done all these tests, they found a bleed. Thus, they did emergency surgery. So at that point, they went in through my groin and they did a surgery in my brain, which I find amazing. And they put in what's called coils, and the coils pack your aneurysm and it stops the bleeding from happening. So that was done emergently. And I spent a month in the hospital, all of which were in intensive care, while they monitored my progress to make sure that I was okay. Do you want me to keep going beyond that?
Yeah, no, keep going.
Okay,
I want to
so
hear.
I wish I could say my story ended there. I wasn't allowed out of bed for 3 weeks. My fourth week, I was allowed out of bed. And that was only with the assistance of a nurse. And that was only to go to the bathroom. That was the only time I was allowed out of bed. So after the 4 weeks, they discharged me with minimal PT in the hospital. They just needed to make sure that I could walk with a walker and get through my house. I, like you, Hillary, have been, I guess I could use the word athlete. I've been running for a number of years, and I actually had run 8 miles the day before my rupture happened. I was eating healthy and in the best shape of my life. So when I got home on the walker, it only took a week for the physical therapist to allow me to start walking on my own. So if there's one thing I can tell any of your listeners is we don't take care of ourselves so that things can't happen. Things are going to happen no matter how much we take care of ourselves. We really take care of ourselves so when something major does happen, we can bounce back from it much faster and much better. So in my case, I was very lucky to be able to come home after 4 weeks, be on a walker for only a week, and to have as few side effects from the rupture as I do. Many people that I come across and talk about it with talk about knowing someone who's died as a result of a rupture because that is the most common outcome. Or many people are using assistance to walk or have difficulty speaking or have difficulty processing on a daily basis. I'm very fortunate that those aren't my issues. So I stayed home. I slowly integrated back to work, but it probably took another 3 or 4 weeks before I could even start doing work and slowly got my way back. After 6 months, they did another angiogram, and at that point, they decided that I needed to have a stent put in. So we moved along that route. And it was a few months thereafter that the stent was actually put in. got that taken care of, and I thought that I was safe and good. And so if I got a headache, I was able to talk myself down and say, but you got the stent in, so all is good. And I went for my follow-up on my stent afterwards. And sure enough, they went in the angiogram and found that the stent didn't take. And so I needed to have what's called clipping done. And clipping is where they actually go in, they cut your skull open, and they put in what you could think of as like a hair clip. It's just a little clip. And they clip at the base of the aneurysm between the aneurysm and the artery to stop the blood from being able to flow back in. It is far and away the most invasive, and as you can imagine, the most dangerous of the surgeries to do. But it's final, it's done. And it gave me the peace of mind that once it was complete, I wasn't going to have to worry about that aneurysm anymore. So I stand here today, a year and a half out from that surgery, knowing that that aneurysm is safe, but monitored for the rest of my life to ensure that no further aneurysms develop in the brain.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's such a difficult experience. Can you talk a little bit about your mental state during and even after when you learned of the third time that you had to have the surgery? I
Well,
think
I can
that
tell you that, yeah,
would help people, you know, that are going through this.
I can tell you when I found out I had the aneurysm, as I said, I looked at the doctor and I said, I'm not dying today. I don't think that I ever really allowed myself to understand the severity of what I was going through. So throughout the hospital, I was supposed to stay in bed and not get out. I tried a number of times and ended out with 24-hour supervision because I was not a good patient. I think partly because I don't know if it's that I didn't understand or I didn't want to understand the true severity of what I was going through. It was hard though, like you said at the beginning, it was in the heart of COVID, and what that meant for me was the very first week I was allowed one visitor at a time. But then they closed the hospital essentially, and I was allowed one visitor for the rest of my stay. So, fortunately for me, John wasn't working at the time, and he had the ability to be there every day, all day long with me. It was kind of a blessing in disguise that he wasn't working. But I wanted more. I mean, he was great, but I wanted to see my kids. Two of them were in New York at the time and had the ability to come see me, but couldn't. My mom lived in Chicago, and there was no way for her to get to New York to even be able to come see me if the doors were open because you couldn't fly on an airplane for the most part. It was an incredibly difficult time to have gone through something so traumatic. So I remember calling my mom and crying and saying, I just want a hug from my mom. Like, that's all I want right now. So there were moments where I relied so much on the people around me. I'm also part of a running group, Jersey Women Strong. And they were there for me every day, even though they couldn't come and visit me. They were not only sending me texts, but John was sending, I don't know, like 50 people texts every day as to what was going on with me. And every day when he came in, he would read their responses to me. So it was overwhelming for me to learn just how supportive of a community I had created. So between my sister, who lived in Westchester, taking care of my two children that were up in New York at the time, and to my boss, who just left me alone. I mean, supported me, but left me alone from a work perspective for weeks and weeks and weeks and months and months and months while I healed. And to this day, who continues to support me when I make mistakes because my brain doesn't function right. And he's like, we're in this together. couldn't have asked for better, and that really helped me get through the day-to-day difficulties. When I was told I had to have this stent, I didn't think much of it because I had known all along, but I wasn't really looking forward to going through another surgery and another ICU stay. But I was in the same ICU that I was in for my rupture. And when I was discharged with the stent, they all stood up and started clapping for me. And the tears start pouring down my face because it's moments like that that you realize just how far you've come in progress. So that was pretty incredible. And then, as a side, I also had to have a subclavian bypass 3 weeks after the stent was put in because I had a blockage of an artery in my shoulder. And so, to say my mental health was not in a great place, especially after the shoulder surgery, it was bad. It was hard, and there were a lot of tears because I just felt like every step forward I took was three steps back because it was just one more medical problem, one more doctor's appointment because they were daily at the beginning, then weekly, then monthly. I mean, it was just, I had had enough. And I kept plugging along and I kept having a positive attitude and that I knew I was going to get through this. But it took a toll trying to keep myself standing up every day. And again, that support network that I talked about, they kept me moving forward every day just with their rah-rah on the sidelines. Like I needed it. I truly needed their energy. And then, like I said, I was in this great place mentally. I realized everything's better. My aneurysm's under control. I got the stent put in. So when they did the angiogram and found out that it hadn't taken, they told me that while I was still on the operating table, and I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried and then I cried some more. I didn't know how I was going to do it again. It just, the thought of one more surgery and the one surgery that I didn't really want to have where they were going to cut open my head. And I didn't know how I was going to do it. But like I said at the beginning, death wasn't an option. So, okay, I guess I'm going to get this one done. And I did. And I had my pity party for a couple weeks after my brain surgery. And I took myself shopping and I went and got my hair done because you would have never known that I had surgery right here 2 weeks after my surgery. You couldn't even tell that I had had it. But I was still having my pity party and I was doing everything I could to try and self-soothe and have other people soothe me because it was rough. But I got through it. Today I stand here and say to you, am I grateful I had a brain aneurysm rupture? Absolutely not. But can I tell you that the people I have met are the most courageous, strong, empowering people I have ever met, without a doubt. It has brought so much to my life. And the Beef Foundation, what it has done for me personally, has been immeasurable. It is where I put my energy and my strength whenever I can, because being able to educate people about brain aneurysms is the best thing we can do to help prevent other people from being in my shoes. You know, one in 50 has one, and we don't know it. And every 18 minutes, there's another rupture. And hopefully, through the research that the B Foundation funds, that those numbers can change.
100% agree. Before we move on, I want to keep going with this, but before we move on, I have to say that I'm so appreciative of our sponsors and must take the time out to thank them. Please support our sponsors and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper on Air. Special thanks to the Russo Law Group, Long Island Signature Elder Law, Special Needs and Estate Planning Law Firm, and Buddha Bath, a natural bath and body care company that offers a wide variety of products, including body butter, bath bombs, soap bars, and sugar scrubs. Now, Tricia, back to you. You know, the one thing I wanted to ask you while you were talking about the support, because I too get that support from my running and triathlon groups. There's just really something special with my running group that I've never found before. Could you talk a little bit about how you actually came back to running? Like, when did that happen? You come home, you're in a wheelchair. I mean, not a wheelchair, a walker. And how did you get yourself to start to run again?
It was slow and it was steady. When I first had my rupture, you know, I could barely walk down this. I could walk down my driveway. That was about the extent of what I could do. I could walk to the end of my driveway. Within a couple of weeks, I could walk to the end of my street, and that was all with a walker. So I had to work on building my strength back up, my stamina back up. My first month out of the hospital, someone from my running group was at my door every day walking with me, literally every day. And whether it was just a walk up the street, and then the walk up the street became a block, and then it became two blocks. And slowly, 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 I built back my stamina. It was 3 months before I was allowed to do anything beyond walking. And I have a Peloton bike. So I started getting on the Peloton bike, and I rode the Peloton bike for 5 minutes when I could make the full 5 minutes. And that was with almost no resistance. And so each time it was just a little bit more. And when I first started running, it was going for a 1 mile walk and running one tenth of, you know, one tenth. That was it. Just one tenth. Let me see if I can get from this tree to that tree. And I slowly, slowly, slowly started integrating it back in. And I would tell you today, I'm not back to where I was. It's partly because after I had my craniotomy, the doctor told me to hold back a little bit, just because every time you run, you're pounding your head. My speed is never going to be what it was. I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I will tell you, I think it was pretty remarkable. I'm going to pat myself on the back on this one. At 6 months, I ran 6 miles. So I did, for the Bee Foundation, I did a fundraiser with my sister, my niece, and two of my running buddies. And we ran 6 miles for 6 months. And we did it really slow, but it didn't matter because we did it. And so that was pretty exciting. And then at my 1 year mark, at that time, again, it was COVID. So my running group every month was doing a half marathon route. So at 1 year, I ran a half marathon and I ran every step. Was it slow? Yes. Was it faster than the half marathon I trained for? Yes. But it was slow and steady progress, and I really had to learn to listen to my body, because I don't know about you, but I'm one of those people, I'm going to push and push and push my limits as far as I can. I can't do that anymore. I have learned with your brain, you can't do that. With your brain, you really have to listen. And so after my craniotomy, when my doctor said to me, kind of watch the running, I've tried to limit myself to no more than 6 miles, which is more than enough for me. That's fine. And so I get out and move. And it's more important to me that I'm moving than how far I'm moving or how fast I'm moving. It clears my head. It's my mental health, right along with my baking. They need it. They need it. And even though I've moved away, Hillary, I still run with all my friends up in New York. We get on the phone, we schedule a time, and we run together.
I love that.
So I continue to have tremendous support from those same people that helped me in the beginning.
I wanted to ask you about, something that keeps coming up with me. That people look at me and they say, "Oh, you look fine. You're 3 weeks out. You look perfect. You look normal." I guess you're all better now. Can you address that?
It is the true challenge that I struggle with, and not just me, as you said, you do, and so many people in this community struggle with, because our disease is internal. There is, in many cases, no external way to know what we're struggling with. I struggle with fatigue. I struggle with headaches. I struggle with certain processing issues and memory issues. They've all gotten way better over time, but continue to struggle. And for me, what I have learned is when I meet someone for the first time, I often have to preface it and tell my story, because I don't want someone to think that, "Oh, I've been there for an hour. Why do I need to go home already?" I want them to understand I just get tired much quicker. I look healthy, but you can't understand and feel what I'm going through inside my body. My brain gets tired, my body gets exhausted. I booked a trip. We booked a trip once. And I was the one in charge of the car rental, and I rented it for the wrong weekend because I struggle with dates and numbers, and I messed it up. So now, whenever I book something, I always have to ask someone to double check my dates, my times, to make sure that what I've put in is correct. And so it truly is a struggle that people don't just look at me and say, "Oh, what happened to you?" so that they can then understand. And a part of me was hoping when I had my craniotomy that there would be this big scar so people would know something happened to my brain. But I now am past that. But still, I wish I had something so that people could know how I feel on the inside, because it truly is an inner disease.
Well, I think just talking about it on forums like this, making people aware that there are issues even after surgery, and also educating people about the B Foundation. So, can you tell our listeners how to get in touch with the B Foundation and also about you if they would like to talk to you, if you have a Facebook page or something like that, that they might be able to send you a message.
Anyone can send me a message through my Facebook page. I'm on there as Tricia Lieberman Scobie, Scobey, and Tricia is spelled TRICIA. So you can certainly find me there and message me. I love talking with people about it. I feel like if I can make a difference in one person's life, then I've lived a very good life. And so I
Well, you
really,
already did that for me.
well, I'm so appreciative to hear that, Hillary, but my experience was so difficult and I felt so alone, that if I could be that person for someone, I will be there as much as I can for everyone. So yes, feel free to message me right on Facebook. And you can get in touch with the B Foundation through their website, which is thebfoundation.org, I believe. And you can go right on there. If you are someone who has a brain aneurysm, they do support groups monthly. So you can get involved in support groups so you can meet other people and hear stories and understand the wins and the losses, not just the struggles, because sometimes it's just as important to share the breakthroughs and the great things that are going on. They can help pair you with a mentor, with someone who can talk you through it, which is how you and I, Hillary, got connected because our experiences were very similar. So it made a lot of sense that you and I would connect. And Erin, who is the director of the B Foundation, is very good at helping find the right resource for you, whether it's a doctor, a hospital, another person. She's really very good. And the B Foundation also has on their website people's blogs, people's stories. So you can kind of go through those stories and you can take a look at what other people have been through. I know when I wrote my blog and it was posted, I was only 3 months out of my rupture. So what I wrote then would probably be very different than what I wrote today. But some of the blogs were written by people who are many years out. And so it's different perspectives of different times by different people. It's also a great place for people who have lost someone to a rupture because they have support groups for that as well. Or if you're a caretaker of someone who has a rupture, they have support groups for that as well and can also connect you with other people who are in the same situation.
Wonderful. Really is a wonderful group. And they do have a few fundraisers that are coming up, I think, right now.
They have ongoing fundraisers. So yes, there are fundraisers that are constantly going on, and you can find those on the website. I work on the race series for them. So when I had my rupture, I was a runner. And at that time, they had a couple of people who did individual races to raise funds for them. And what we did was we created a race series, and we have runs that go on now throughout the whole country where people can hop on, or you can do it virtually just to participate and to help fundraise for them. So that happens in the month of September because it's Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And it trickles into October because there are a couple races that happen then as well.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I know it's going to help so many people, and it definitely helped me. I also want to thank our sponsors once more, the Russo Law Group, Long Island Signature Elder Law, Special Needs and Estate Planning Law Firm. For additional information, visit vjrussolaw.com and Buddha Bath, a natural body and bath company. For more information, visit buddhabath.net. And last but not least, I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. If you want more information on this show or any other show, visit us at hillarytopper.com, or you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Alexa, you name it, we're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.